Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to the Brainstorm episode 45. And we're giving the people what they want today, and that is Tesla with Tasha. Tasha, you've been doing a ton of research on autonomous vehicles over the past 10 years. And now it sounds like people are finally open to hearing with the implications. So why don't you take us through what happened on Tesla's earnings call and what changed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's finally, it's in the spotlight now more than it ever has been in the past, but I still don't see a ton of sell side analysis taking it seriously, I'd say. But yeah, what's different now is, you know, on this recent earnings call, I'd say that robotaxis got a spotlight in a way that they have not before. Tesla previewed what the ride hailing app could look like in the report that they published online. It's like a mock-up of what that app could look like. So they talked about sort of a mix between cars owned by Tesla versus, you know, owned by Tesla owners. They didn't mention fleet owners, but I think that's how the, you know, this will scale, as other companies will own fleets of Tesla vehicles, or maybe other company, depending. But, you know, to zoom out, like, why do we think that this is such a big deal? Well, the price target that we published for Tesla for 2027, that we're currently updating now, $2,000 per share. In that analysis, we thought that roughly 2/3 of the enterprise value could be attributable to robotaxis. And it's because this is a business that will have recurring revenues, and it will also have margins, we think, that are much higher than the base vehicle business. So I'm really excited. You know, I'm looking forward to the event in August. I can't wait to see, you know, what other tidbits they unveil. They gave us the app. What are we seeing next? And it feels like, certainly from a software update perspective, that those are actually happening at a faster clip now as well. And Tesla said so. So every couple of weeks, we're getting a meaningful update to full self-driving, or FSD. I feel the difference. So I'm looking forward to that day when, you know, my car becomes a fully autonomous car.
And China, what just happened there as well? And because that's a difference from our model, I believe, that we published last year, right?
Well, so the news is that Tesla, you know, might have gotten approval in China for full self-driving. So I guess to your point, last year, you know, they didn't have that approval. So, you know, full self-driving right now has really just been active in the US. It doesn't exist in Europe or other markets, including China. This announcement is a big deal because China is very protective of their video data, their mapping data, I think that's why we see Tesla partnering with a local mapping provider. Although, of course, it just makes sense. You know, they use Google Maps and other sources here, so why wouldn't they use a local source there? You know, as you know, Sam, and all the work that you've done on electric, like the auto market's something that really matters to China. So to let a foreign player come in on autonomy, I think is something that's, you know, not to be looked over. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think there's also interesting speculation happening, right? On the earnings call, they also mentioned that they're in talks with someone to lease the FSD technology. And I think there's a lot of speculation that that is Ford, just based on what they've done with the North American charging standard, how quick they were to adopt that, some of the back and forth on Twitter. And now there are people out there on Twitter saying, you know, maybe BYD should be interested in this because, you know, they've publicly said they're not too optimistic on autonomous vehicles, but they are certainly making compelling low-cost electric vehicles.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like if I were to create a list of the other automakers and how that, you know, other automakers that are meaningfully far along on autonomy, it'd be a really short list. So in other words, there's like a very long list of potential automakers that can and maybe should partner with Tesla on this technology, because otherwise, how are they going to get access to it? So yes, Ford, you know, they had an internal effort, Argo AI, that's no more. BYD was working with Baidu. And then last year, they switched away from that. They said, no, we're going to do some internal features. As you've said, they've, you know, said how difficult that this technology can be publicly. So I mean, I think any one of those would be a really exciting development. I think, you know, while I'm optimistic that other automakers could license this at some point in the future, I think it's just such a, for a traditional automaker to really throw in the towel and say, yeah, I'm not good at technology, I'm gonna look to Tesla. That's a really big deal. And I think so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that decision is delayed, if it, you know, this doesn't have a meaningful impact and Tesla's value over the next 5 years. Although, you know, that's not to say that it's not coming, right?
Yeah. And then Tasha, maybe this would be good. This was asked by some people in the brainstorm on Friday as well. And I'm sure those who've been following your research know this incredibly well. But for everyone else, maybe in as simple terms as possible, what are the fundamental difference in business model and economics of selling just an electric vehicle versus selling an autonomous electric vehicle?
Yeah, so if you assume today a Model 3 costs $40,000, assume they get, you know, single digit thousands in operating profit off of that vehicle. This changes the business model, or robotaxis change the business model from, you know, mostly a single upfront sale to a meaningful recurring revenue stream. So let's take that same Model 3 and assume that it's a robotaxi now and it's operating at scale. So let's assume that Tesla gets a good utilization rate on the car. This car is running 100,000 miles per year in revenue miles. Those are, you know, passenger revenue miles. And Tesla is actually able to lower the cost of ride hail to just $1. So that meaningfully undercuts what Uber and others do today. So that's $100,000 in revenue. We think that they can get, you know, double digit. Okay. I'm going to start over. Okay, so assuming that a Model 3 today cost about $40,000, you know, Tesla's getting single digit thousands in operating profit off of that vehicle from a one-time sale. In a robotaxi network, you get a meaningful recurring revenue stream. So that same Model 3, let's say it's going 100,000 miles per year, you know, it's charging customers just $1 per mile. That's a lot cheaper than Uber and Lyft, thanks to a much higher utilization rate on an autonomous taxi. And then you're getting $100,000 in recurring revenue off of that car versus just, you know, the initial $40,000 sale. We also think that this model could actually have more attractive margins, as I said. So, you know, we're talking double digit thousands in operating profit per car per year. versus that one time again. So, you know, this is why we think that robotaxis could be 2/3 of the enterprise value of Tesla in the next 5 years. And as I say that, look out for our upcoming valuation model on Tesla. That should be out soon.
All right, Nick, you're our Threads user, our resident look into Tesla Q and what's going on. Why is there reason to doubt here?
Well, I want to ask the question to both of you. What do you think are some of the major hurdles to rolling out a robo-taxi network? Obviously, it's not as easy as just flipping on a switch and now everyone that has FSD capability can allow their car to go out on the road. So what exactly do you think are some of those hurdles that are not being talked about?
Yep. Tasha, you kick it off?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest hurdle really is solving for full autonomy. So I mean, you know, making the car work in enough corner cases such that you can actually take a person out of the front seat. That is by far, you know, the hardest step to cross. And Tesla hasn't gotten there yet. Although we are seeing pretty positive signs. I mean, a lot of the videos that are being posted online for the, you know, the current versions of FSD show, you know, nearly full drives, in some cases full drives, where the owner's not touching the wheel at all. So I think that if they wanted to, you know, there's certain areas in the US like California where it works really well today, where they could launch. Then, you know, a lot of people might say, well, regulatory hurdles should, those are a big deal. And not that regulation isn't something to think about. I think it is. It absolutely is. I actually think there's like a skew in how people view the regulation of autonomous cars because most of the activity has already happened in California or happened in California first. Because this state actually has more hurdles to pass than other states. So, and I'm talking like, okay, well, you get approval to launch a service, then you get approval to charge for a service. You might have to, you know, we've seen Cruise and Waymo do some initial geographic area, then they need approval to expand. I don't think the process will work the same in every state. So I think it could be simpler. And we already do have quite a number of states that have either regulation that doesn't explicitly exclude autonomy or actually, you know, favors it and has language that is friendly to autonomy. I believe it's about roughly half of states have that. So I actually don't think that regulation is as big of a deal as many make it out to be. I think it's really the technology.
And even on that, I would say it lends itself to Tesla's strength in the amount of data it has and proving that it's statistically significant with respect to being safer than a human.
I guess one other question here. What, when we talk about utilization, you mentioned that these should have significantly higher utilization than passenger vehicles and even Uber. What does Waymo look like on a utilization basis? And then I have maybe a more narrow edge case or just a potential hurdle that maybe is short-term thinking, but I'm just trying to think through some of the obstacles I see. But curious on the utilization.
Yeah, you know, Waymo really doesn't provide transparency into that kind of statistic. But here's the thing that I'd say that's important to know about Waymo. The last update that we got from them is that they have hundreds of vehicles on the road. Now, if you have ride hail going in two separate cities and you have hundreds of vehicles, not thousands, I would guess, you know, that it's actually hard to bootstrap a network because, you know, if you're Uber in New York City, you have, you know, tens of thousands of cars, right? So just on that basis alone, I would say that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it was on the lower end. I could imagine that Waymo might have lower utilization than a taxi. But the thing is, we really don't know. Mm-hmm. A taxi in New York City today gets about a 30% utilization rate. The average passenger car, less than 5% of the day. So, you know, we estimate that an autonomous vehicle could get north of 50. I don't think it's a far stretch to say that an autonomous vehicle will be a lot more efficient than a human-driven cab driver today.
And yeah. Also, Tasha, adding on to what you're saying, Waymo's not even cheaper than an Uber or Lyft, right?
No.
So it's like you're using it for a novelty, and you're not saving money. So you can imagine that if both of those are flipped, then there's the answer on whether or not there will be demand. All right, Nick, let's hear the disclaimer.
Okay, devil's advocate. We've reached full self-driving capability. Tesla now allows me as an individual to, you know, use my car as a robo-taxi. One, curious, and I'm sure there are very clever solutions to all of this and probably solutions that have already been built. One is, what does my insurance policy now look like? I assume it's going to be a large step up. That's an additional cost to me as now an operator. The second is, how exactly does this car charge? It's not charging itself. Does Tesla now employ charging attendants? Do I have to be home when this comes back to my garage, which it doesn't have the capability to get into on its own? How exactly does that work, or how would you think they could solve for it?
So starting backwards on charging, I mean, in the past, Tesla has, there's been, you know, talk of a robotic snake charger. So first I'd say, like, if your car, so it's not, you could leave your garage open. You can imagine it where it's like the app takes care of a lot for you. So it's like, I sign mm-hmm. my car up and I say, I want it to be on the network from, you know, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And I know the car's coming back at 5. So I'm careful to open my garage door then. Or maybe it just, you know, kind of waits around until the garage door is open, which wouldn't really be the end of the world. Also, you know, yeah, I think our insurance rates today are higher for ride hail platforms. You can imagine that in this type of business, which is already how ride hail works. If you are driving the car for business purposes versus personal purposes, that's when that ride hail insurance program kicks in. So I think it'd be the same here. Of course, Tesla has their own insurance program. It's not available in every state. You know, if they didn't have it up and running, they could use an insurance partner. If they did have it up and running in that particular state, they could do their own insurance policy there.
My other question is on adoption rates. Assuming that not mm-hmm. everyone signs up to have their vehicle go around and become a robo-taxi, what exactly are we expecting?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I wanted to say this on your last question, a really important distinction to make here is that our expectations for robo-taxi scaling are not dependent on individual owners signing up their vehicles. I would expect for this to scale, you're having, you know, likely another company that buys fleets of Teslas to own and operate them. So it's more like one big fleet working together as dedicated business vehicles not owned by individuals versus people signing their vehicle up. I think it's definitely possible people could sign their vehicle up and we could look at the FSD subscribers and some fraction of them. You know, so Elon said there's 1.8 million people that have access to FSD now, roughly half of them are using it. And then I would assume some fraction of those people would be willing to sign their vehicles up. But I think the way that this works is more like a fleet business model in the future.
And Nick, you like to point out the inventory numbers that get thrown out there. Imagine if all of a sudden there's no inventory, but a fleet of vehicles all deployed to a single city.
Yep, that's definitely possible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, like to your point on utilization, to really kickstart a service, and Tesla might do this with their own fleet at first, you want to concentrate vehicles in one area. So right. that would be like another reason that you wouldn't just want to rely on users.
Right. You want density so that you can compete exactly. on delivering service. That makes sense.
Tasha, I think an important last question here is, are we switching nomenclature from robo-taxi to cybercab?
Yeah, it's the first time we heard them. So what do you think of that term, cybercab? Because, you know, originally we were thinking, oh, this car could like be some iteration of like the design that they chose for the Cybertruck. And then when they continued to talk about it, it didn't, you know, and we heard the issues with manufacturing the Cybertruck, it seemed like, well, maybe they won't go down that route. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I think from if Cybertruck was mass scalable, it would make sense, right? You don't have to paint it. So there's no like emissions limit on the number you can produce. I've seen some of the fender benders of cars running into the Cybertruck, and you really can't tell that the Cybertruck has been in an accident. So, you know, if you could scale that technology, I think it makes a lot of sense to be able to do that. I think from what we've seen, there's, you know, it's a new technology, so it's difficult, and it's unclear if that's fundamental to that design or if it's just early days. I think my gut right now is just saying that cyber is relative to styling, but I'm still holding out that they solve the stainless steel manufacturing and we can have a ton of true cyber stainless steel cabs running around. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's like a catchy phrase either way. So I like that there, you know, it's like it gets you thinking. It's like another thing to get people speculating on, sparking interest in the platform itself. So I like it for that reason. Yeah, but I like you would kind of wait. It's like, okay, well, what they are pulling design elements, I'd be curious what they are, just given what we've heard about the process.
Okay, and then the most important, you guys have both have a good connection on Go. I want you to say the year that you think the cyber taxi network launches.
In what type of rollout?
In commercial, it just starts commercially. People are paying for rides.
At right. scale?
No.
No, it starts. This is the launch.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
26.
2025.
Oh, look at that.
Mitch, you're up.
Well, okay. So my
right, well, now a big conversation comes in.
Let me clarify. I think you'll see maybe even late 25, a rollout in limited scope of the, you know, cyber cab network in the same way that you have Waymo and SF. I think that's what you'll see, but I don't think you're going to see a national scaled cyber cab network until 2030. I think there's a lot of hurdles there to roll it out nationwide. So that's probably where I differ.
Yeah, I think, certainly like next 5 years for scale, sometime in that time period kind of is what I would expect. I mean, it depends on what you consider scale as well, but I think that's possible. Yeah, I agree with you that it's like Waymo and Cruise have shown us that the minimum viable product seems possible sooner rather than later. I think it will look different than Waymo just because they already have more scale. I mean, it could be nearly, but I think, you know, there's no reason, given that Tesla has decided to do a more dynamic approach to autonomy and that they're, you know, a fully verticalized manufacturer that's prioritizing this. I'm more optimistic for it to look different than those platforms, but.
All right, Tasha, thank you for joining us. Everyone go read her past 5+ years of research. All the questions we hear people asking, Tasha's done extensive modeling on. So don't be afraid to dig up those old papers.
Sam, I think you have to answer this question as well.
In what year I think they commercially launch?
Yes.
I'm going 26.
That seems fair. I think we have to come back on after the August 8th delivery event or the event and reassess.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah,
that's right. Maybe it starts 8/7. Maybe that's how we get there.
Maybe.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. See everyone next week.
Thanks for having me on.